Calling the meeting to order.
Oops, did we get it turned on?
Yes, it's on. Okay, first up, we have roll call. Excuse me, today's date is May 26th, 2015, or so.
Maria DeAnda.
Here.
Donna Riley, here. Gordon Ford. Mike Lynch. Jim DeMartini.
Here.
Michael O'Neill.
Here.
Jeff Grover.
Here.
Jason Gordo.
Here.
Joan Clendenin.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Announcements.
I have an announcement. There will be a correction to the meeting minutes to reflect on the April 28th meeting that Joan Clendenin was indeed present. So that correction will be made.
Okay, public comment. Members of the public. Consent items. Anything need to be pulled? Do I have a motion?
I move that we approve the consent items.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so moved. Number six, annual performance report by Medley. Welcome.
Great. Thank you. And thank you all for having us. We're delighted to be here. My name is Seth Talby. I'm one of the founders and the co-CEO of Medley. I have with me Scott Von Stein, who works in institutional investing. Michelle Soltis, who runs our asset management, which means she's accountable for pretty much everything once we've made an investment. So she has an enormous team that reports to her and ensures that the portfolio is safe, and the reporting to you all is sourced through Michelle, the CFO. So great, delighted to have her here. And then also Christopher Talby, who is the head of institutional fundraising and maintains a relationship with the staff as well as the consultants. I'd like to acknowledge both of those as well, because we deal with a lot of different consultants and staff, and it's a particular pleasure working with you all. So thanks for having us. We came here over 2 years ago and made a request that you invest in our second fund, and we made two primary commitments to you. One was to deliver on returns in our strategy, or led into the middle market. And the second commitment was continue to invest and grow the team. And we're happy to say that if you look at the portfolio today, I think we can comfortably say that we've delivered on the returns and executed exactly what we said when we sat here 2.5 years ago. And the team now is 82 people. So we've increased from, I believe it was 52, or just under around 50 when we came here 2.5 years ago. So a substantial increase. And the commitment is to continue to build our world-class investment team. So that's equally balanced. If you look at the portfolio summary in front of you, I'm on page 2. Sections 1 to 6 are an overview of your investment today. And the request we have is to come and talk about your investment and give a reporting and accounting to you on what we've done and how you've done with your investment. Sections 7 to 10 are a review of the market. If we have time or people are interested, we can talk again to refresh you on the market and the market opportunity. What I will say, just high level, is we lend money to companies that have $50 to $300 million of revenue. So we're a lender. We call that the middle market. And the opportunity in that sector still remains as strong today as it was when we first came here. So although we've fully invested in Medley Opportunity Fund 2, I think you'll see that the investments, there was no required style drift because the market opportunities are constant. And today, looking forward, the dynamics in the market are attractive. So if you would please turn to page 3. These are just some facts for you. We're 82 people today. We have $3.7 billion of investable capital, just to give you a scale of the firm. I think if you did that math and divided by capital by number of people, we have more people than the average investment manager per dollar of capital invested, and that's a commitment that we've made to you all as and all the other investors, and we'll keep the human beings and the infrastructure ahead of the assets. We have successfully invested 97% of the capital in 54 investments. When we made the first, when we were talking about the Opportunity Fund 2, we used 50 as the number of investments, and we stuck to that. That just means it's highly diversified. Good news is we have realized over half the capital since you all invested. So that's about on pace, a little bit faster than we had initially expected, which translates into a higher IRR and slightly lower multiple investment when you harvest cash early. But no one's complaining that that's happening. It's the other way that is less desirable.
Can I make a quick request as you kind of navigate this pitch deck to, if you could, when you do get to kind of, I see the next page four is going to get more into performance, but even spend a moment to educate us again just the difference between IRRs, time-weighted returns, where the fund is at, and how you would say that fares against broad market expectations for kind of direct lending, senior secured, so on and
great.
So forth.
You want to do that?
Sure. Where we are today in the fund is we're at 8% on an IRR basis net to our investors on average. We're projecting that to be at about 9.5% once the fund is fully completed. We use no leverage at the fund level, so this is an unlevered return. You'll see some other middle market direct lending firms out there which will have 50% leverage at the fund level. So this is an unlevered strategy for lending to the middle market.
So Chris, so in Stan Sarah's case, currently as we're tracking kind of things internally, the number's a little bit lower than that.
Sure.
Is that just noise, or is that something that's unique to Stan Sarah?
Because Stan Sarah came in a little bit later in the fund, so the people that close early in the fund, they get all of the yield up until when Stan Sarah, if they came in a year later, the early investors would get the yield in the first year. And then when Stan Sarah or another closer came in, they would get the yield from that point forward.
Okay, so it has to do with the timing of the
exactly
actions.
When you come in. So the early investors,
not the penalty,
these
not
funds,
the 8%
no, absolutely no penalty.
And Chris, you and I have talked about this before on the phone. And just to let you know that we put out information just based specifically on our cash flows and the internal rate of return. And it is a little bit lower. So
correct.
Just so everybody
exactly
knows.
Yep.
And that should migrate.
Correct.
One of the things... So the IRR is, we expect will march higher. We don't know how much higher. It's dependent upon market dynamics. If you look at the third large bullet on page three, we have 35 investments remaining and then two equity positions. So the two equity positions are a result of the underlying loan paying off. So they were a loan with a warrant. The loan paid off, we still have the equity position. So in the other 35 investments, so 37 total, the other 35. and it's highly disclosed when you actually go take a loan. But it doesn't mean that people who can't pay it back or don't pay it back don't want to find interesting ways to blame the lender. It's not that dissimilar to what happened in subprime or in student finance or other kind of consumer-related financing markets. The unfortunate, I think, part from our perspective is it's been the best performing position. But we committed to you to, you know, one of the themes that we have talked about since we partnered with you is partnership. At our firm, integrity and partnership are the core values that we operate under. And you all came to us and said, this is a problem. We said, okay, we'll exit the loan. So we actually actively went and exited the loan. And rather than spend time justifying our point of view that there's a reason why it exists and it should, we just took on board the feedback. What we've said is we're not going to bat 1,000. We're going to hopefully deliver the returns. We're out. Any other questions on the page 4? Okay, great. So page 5 is a detail. Sorry for the font size, but that's why I need my glasses for this one. This is the remaining summary of the investment portfolio today. And as you can see, by and large, we keep investments at what we call an asset rating of 2. That just means that they're on underwriting plan. You would become a 1 in our system from a credit standpoint if you're performing in excess or substantially in excess, and then migrate downwards if you do not perform as well. So we have, as you might expect, a few investments that are performing less well than we had expected. We're actively involved in those with the intention of recovering. All of these to date, if you look here, none of them are realized losses yet. All these represent mark to market, and that doesn't mean that we can't recover. Just based upon today's underwriting, from a fair value perspective, we've marked them based upon FASB 157 and the required GAAP process.
Couple painful ones here.
Yep.
You want to touch any of them? And
sure. Yep.
Well, there's modern video. There's 3 5s. Just pick the 3 5s. Right. Modern video.
So modern video film is a. It was just sold, actually. 2360, but it was a video post-production company, 30-year experience, that basically once a film is produced, it's then sent to someone like Modern Video Film prepared for the distribution. And two fundamental things happened. There was a strike with what are called the colorists. That's basically a labor strike in their business. And then as a result of that, customers moving to different vendors. So that was from an underwriting perspective, it was we missed the labor risk in that market. We had assessed it. You know, it just ended up being an issue, a risk that was larger than we had expected. Coin, it was in the laundry business, so they have
routes in the predominantly in the Northeast, where they work with hotels and factories that have uniforms, and they basically just do laundry. So they pick up laundry, deliver it. It was subject to substantial price compression and competition in the market to basically take customers away. So we're optimistic that that'll return. It's just on today, based upon what happened to their EBITDA in the competitive environment, we just misassessed the competitive risks. So larger competitors are going to come in and price at negative margins to win the business. So today, I would say it's all a reflection of reduction in EBITDA, right? So there's nothing, there wasn't a third rail. It was just competitive threat in the industry that we, again, that was just a misassessment on our part.
So if we take COIN, is that something that you ultimately take a position in the company? In other words, a management role,
yeah,
or at least a board,
yeah,
seat, I would suspect. But
yeah,
what about day-to-day management of the business?
That is, we will not put our people into that. But in this case, there's another lender, NXT, and we'll collaborate with them to basically replace management to run the business. Now, it takes a while to get there. Just because somebody defaults and doesn't make a payment doesn't mean you can immediately swoop in. So it either has to be a consensual process with the owner, or has to go through some kind of bankruptcy cleansing to get to that. In this case, we avoided the bankruptcy process, so it was a kind of a consensual process. But you know, it's probably a jump ball. 50% of the time you have to go through bankruptcy, 50% you can work it out with the existing equity. And then Greenfield Energy Services was a small position. That was a victim of what happened in the oil industry, basically. They're involved in fracking, and they have a next generation turbine to power fracking. So two things happened. That whole world is, as you all know, upside down for now. And it lost a big customer. So it was both of those that were just on spot price in the commodity market. And all three of those, as I said, they're marked to market. As you can see where they're marked, the reason that they're marked at 5 is that we expect that we will lose some principal. So if you said, if we sat here, when we said it 2.5 years ago, we would have said that we expect 2 or 3 or 4 to get more complicated. That's our euphemism for making a big mistake. So it's in line with the expectations. It never is, you know, we got to do a better job on those, and we will. We look carefully at making mistakes, and it doesn't make us happy. But we can't bat 1,000 in this business. Does that answer the question? Last thing I would say is we're working to get it back. It's not realized. So if we assess you and shoot straight that it's, you know, it's marked today where we think we can realize it, but that doesn't mean that we're not, you know, fighting tooth and nail to get back the $20 million on MDF. It's possible. I tell you it's fairly marked today. But we think today we can realize it. But we're going to work every day fighting. Like,
if I recall from the original presentation, you said that you looked at companies that had assets that you could, you know, absorb in case of a loss. So, like COIN, for example, if it got to the point, you could just say, okay, we're going to sell off all your trucks and all your linens, and at least get some of that back.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, we didn't, to separate the corporate lending, you know, credit-based term lending from true asset-based lending, we're definitely in this camp. Now, we look carefully at the company's assets. It doesn't mean that we'll make a loan that we're fully 100% asset protected, especially when things don't work out. It looks asset protected day one, but you know, if you lose half your EBITDA in the company, if we lend 50% loan to value, which is our target, and the company loses half its cash flow, you go from 50 to 100% loan to value. So we're not a pure asset-based lender receivables inventory, but in this case, all three of those companies, whatever they have there, we take. When these routes, which have value, you think about have trucks, big distribution laundry centers, and then routes that they loop around, there's value in all three of those. The P PP&E in the distribution center, the assets, the trucks, and then the routes. The problem is, you know, when you're not performing and you want to sell, it's not the optimal time. So our intention is to land at a level where we believe on the portfolio level we're going to get our money back across the board. And we'll have one or two that we lose money, and then of those three today that are bonus, our expectation historically has been that half of them will be losers and half of them will make money. That's how we look at the those that perform well that we had initially intended. And I think that's true if you look at bank performance. People make a lot of money on the bad bank and they make mistakes. It just takes a lot of elbow grease to do it. So it sounds good when you say it out loud that half the time we make money. Michelle was saying we don't get paid enough for that, but that's generally this business, is that you're going to make some mistakes, and 50% of the time you're going to, because we have to work with the borrowers. We call it accommodate them. They call it extortion sometimes. But, you know, that's what they say. We require them to pay more money. And they would rather, when they don't do what they say, have us just waive their covenants and accommodate
them. Well, they come to you to ask for money, right?
Well, even better.
So
it starts with, will you please waive all of your
potential
covenant breaches? Then there's a request for money or a waiver of interest or something like that. Page 6 is a recapitulation. I think the highlight here is that by borrower, highly concentrated, and then by sector as well. Now, some of these sectors are larger buckets. I think the important part is the left side, which shows that there's no concentrated position, which speaks to diversification. Page 7, I think to your point is whether you have a lien or not on the assets.
Sorry, real quick. On page 6, pipeline acquisition, Northern Light, can you talk about how that relationship is evolving and where that's going? That was a bridge loan, right? It's a
bridge loan, but it's also a term loan. The bridge loan was paid out. And the term loan is still
outstanding.
And what are they using the term loan for?
It's just financing ongoing business. We just need to fill them up. So we'll just pull off the details on that.
I can follow them offline.
On page 7, I think the highlight here is, which goes to Michael's point, if you look at the, other than the equity position, which is an appreciation if the company performed well, the rest of it is secure. So it's first lien or second lien, which means if you're in a position where you have liquid assets, you have a claim on them. And from the lower right-hand corner, you can see it's about two-thirds floating rate. We don't really have a position on the term structure today. It seems like it's biased towards the Fed taking the curve back. What we've said in the past is about two-thirds of the portfolio will be floating rate. In today's environment where LIBOR is set so low, what that means in reality, when we give someone $50 million or $30 million, we index the rate to LIBOR, so LIBOR plus 8%, usually with a floor of 1%. So whether it's 30 or 60 or 90-day LIBOR, the idea is that it's, I guess even the deal teams hope that at some point LIBOR rises because that means we deliver more returns. But we're not trying to make a bet on where the curve is today. It's more a function of the market itself. So the borrowers, two-thirds of the time on floating rate, and two-thirds of the time it's a fixed rate.
So where would that rate difference be, fixed versus floating?
Sorry.
If I came to you today and said, I need $25 million to fund my whatever.
Our bias is floating, but as you get to the higher end of the floating, we're going to, let's say, a borrower that is, we assess would be, you know, LIBOR plus 800 is the floor of 1 is 9.
Right.
Start, if you're a borrower that will, you think the appropriate price is 12, that's when the borrower starts saying, hey, look, you know, okay, I'll pay 12, but I don't want to take interest rate risk also. Now, that's a risk we could turn it to floating rate on our own, but it just works like that. As you get towards the higher nominal rate.
So these are the less creditworthy borrowers. Initially less creditworthy.
I'd have to get back specifically on that. It generally is what we'll find on those types of loans is there'll be, say, lower loan to value also. So if you said, are they riskier companies, probably because they'll bear higher rates that we charge. Do we structure them to take more risk? Maybe not. Maybe actually on those we lend it 2.5 times cash flow instead of 3.5 to 4 times. So I think, let me get back to you on that specifically to show.
We'll talk about next one.
Yeah, we'll be back.
That's right.
But the point of this is we do think it provides some hedge. If the Fed raises except number, if the curve comes back, if we will benefit from rates rising. We don't get hurt if rates rise. That doesn't mean that the public markets don't throw all the fixed income and specialty finance and all that out of the bathwater for fear of the Fed, which is what's happening today in the credit markets to some extent. Strangely, people just don't see that we benefit because we're predominantly a floating rate lender if rates go up. Page 8 just shows the kind of the portfolio maturity. You can see there's a few that are longer duration, but it's not, you know, by and large, you can see that it's inside of 4 years. So we have a lot of visibility to getting the capital back. And as I said, my expectation is that it will be, based on what we know now with the performance, it is likely that 3.8 stated weighted average maturity will be shorter because people will prepay earlier is our expectation. I'm just going to stop there. I know we had 30 minutes and we've consumed it. Would you like to spend any more on the market opportunity or any other areas of summary of the team?
Any questions? I think
okay. Great. Well, I just want to thank you. As we leave, just thank you for trusting us and partnering with us. We're working hard to fix the mistakes that we've made. And really looking forward to approaching 9.5% or 10% net return for you on doing exactly what we said we would. So
thanks for all your time. Thanks for your support and partnership. We're really grateful. And thanks to the team over here to keep us on our toes. One last thing. I apologize to Nate. I cut my hair because I just think it's easier to deal with, and he's basically upset with me because I have a full head of hair.
it's a little arrogant.
I just want to publicly apologize to Nate for doing that.
On the way out, ask him about his rabbits.
Thank you all.
I was trying to call him.
I didn't want to use the term funny.
Yeah, sure, that'd be great. Thanks.
Purposes, you know, money coming in, going out on a regular basis, and also they keep cash for market opportunities. So when a manager keeps cash on hand that he's not fully invested, there is an active return opportunity cost, and there's a passive benchmark return opportunity cost. Now, when I say cost, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing that they keep the money in cash, because if they actually had a negative active return of the benchmark did poorly, then keeping the money in cash would have actually worked out well. So the bottom line is that that fact that they keep cash not invested is now being worked in the play here, comes into play here in the determination of this calculation. So we only were able to start getting data, cash, uninvested cash data as of October 1st, 2014. So that's where we're going to start looking at this metric, and for the first quarter 2015, we see that the portfolio, the non-alternative portfolio, lost about $1.2 million on a value-added basis after fees. We can attribute that 1.9 to domestic equities and a loss of about $500,000 to fixed income. However, for the last quarter, and in fact the last two quarters, international equity has done very well on a relative basis. They've added $1.3 million in value added. For the alternative portfolio, I really hesitate on whether I want to show this, but I put it out there anyway. One of the reasons is because of the benchmark. Mm. When we come up with this value add, we're looking at we're measuring them against the benchmark, and the benchmark is not a valid benchmark.
No.
Because the benchmark is a flat 9%, and that means that when you look at a benchmark and you judge an investment strategy, or you would judge a manager on a benchmark, you have to have the alternative to be able to invest in that benchmark. And there's no investment out there that's going to give me a guaranteed risk-free rate of return of 9%.
If there was, we would all
sign
go.
Exactly.
We'd all go home.
So, and we've talked about this. So the benchmark to measure the alternative investments is just not valid. Is there anything out there on the horizon?
Yeah, John's been doing some pretty interesting thoughts in terms of this asset class. I can let him.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of look at it as you say, well, what am I, you can think of it as an opportunity cost. I talked to Ann about this. You know, do you put it in something similar? Do you say, well, I wouldn't be doing this at all, so I just put it in basic fixed income? Or do I say, well, I'd spread it across the rest of the fund?
it's really kind of what do you think you're achieving out of this asset class? And those are all options you can look at. And so it's, you know, there's really no single answer.
So my fiscal services manager, Kathy, asked me about a potential idea, which I thought it was probably a pretty good idea. Is this a valid benchmark to use where you would use, what would you have been in had we not invested right. in that directly?
Exactly. And that's what I mean. The opportunity cost is like, and you, the question is, what would you have been in can kind of sometimes be not a straightforward answer.
So you could get to, like a lot of times in private equity, what they'll do to benchmark private equity is they'll use a broad public equity index and then add to that an absolute hurdle, let's say of 3%. So they'll take the Russell 3000 plus 3%. So it's a hybrid of an actual index and something that you can't actually invest in, but it does provide some ebb and flow, like a benchmark might. So in this case, you might take something that be more out there on the risk spectrum in terms of fixed income, and then you add a premium that we would consider appropriate. But you come into some of the same problems in terms of not matching the actual assets you're invested in to a benchmark. So yeah. It's a riddle.
That's the same thing when you do an S&P plus 3 or Russell 3 plus 3. You can't invest that. It's more like an investment objective versus a benchmark. You know, because you can say, well, did I meet my objective if you outperformed by 200 basis points? No. Did you make the fund money? Well, if you could only invest it in private equity or in public equity, the answer is, yeah, you made 200 basis points over what kind of the alternative was. So that's actually, you know, good news and bad news.
Well, so the bottom line is that I don't know how much stock one would necessarily want to put in this value-added report for alternatives. And obviously, I think the best thing to look at is the internal rate of return, because it just takes all the cash flows, whether they're from expenses, contributions, disbursements, and it aggregates all that information into one, I think, reliable number. And that's also part of this. But
if I could book in it, though, because I sat here when we did this way back 3 years ago, and we ventured in this asset class. And we did it to get a better return than fixed income. And we're seeing that. Definitely. That's not a benchmark, but I want to make sure that that is said. We are itching and clawing our way towards the goal that we originally set out.
I think that's what made me think maybe that's where we should be measuring it, because we are taking the money from fixed income.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say let's do that, but the academic in me knows that we're taking some more risk than just the Barclays Ag.
Correct.
So.
The next report is the investment fee summary, and that breaks down the amount of fees that Stan Sarah paid, both managerial and custodial. And we gave you this information for the last quarter of 2014 and for the entire year of 2014. And if you look at the investment fee summary for the year 2014, you'll see that in the upper right-hand corner, the total portfolio paid 37.1 basis points in fees, which is actually, and that includes everything. That includes all our alternative investments and in fact, the money that we pay to our investment consultant. That's about 2 basis points higher than the average 1937X system. However, if you look at the last quarter of 2014, you'll see that that number has dropped below 29 basis points. And that has a lot to do with the fact that we now have this performance-based fee schedule with LSV, which this does not include that performance fee in there because it's only calculated every June 30th. So that's going to make that number actually a little higher. But the big thing that's driving this number down, and I expect it'll be lower than the average 37X system, is our new custodial arrangement with Northern Trust. Mm-hmm. The fees are just so much more lower, and I think that we'll really start to see a year-over-year basis point fee that is actually lower than the average 37X system. Another thing I want to draw your attention to on this is small cap growth, Legato Capital. You'll see that in the last quarter of 2014, we still paid them just south of 100 basis points, which seems like a lot. We actually looked at the fee that we paid them for the first quarter in 2015, and that dropped 77 basis points, and that's due to the new fee structure that we negotiated with them at the end of last year. So that's actually coming down quite a bit, too. The next report are these alternative investment reports. And this actually shows you all the cash flows on the right-hand side of each of these. We have information for White Oak, Medley, Raven, and now Greenfield, our first real estate investment. We've actually gathered and updated now that we could present something to you that we have confidence in. But in the lower right corner, you can see the internal rate of return for the prior quarter, the internal rate of return for the last quarter, December 31st, and then we back into what that would mean for the quarter four return. You can see that White Oak is actually heads and tails above everybody else in terms of internal rates of return at this point in time. And then something that Trustee Ford asked for is also on this page, and this shows the remaining uncommitted capital that we have to Greenfield. And it shows you when that commitment period end date is, and it shows you what the management fees are that we're going to be paying. Trustee Ford asked us to show the uncommitted capital that we would be still paying fees for until the commitment period ended. He asked for that, so we're showing you that. Medley and Raven were done, so that doesn't come into play with them. Greenfield, obviously, we just entered that investment, and that's going to be that'll be an issue for another year or so. And then finally, we have the cash flow report for the recent quarter. First quarter 2015, and then the prior year, April 1st, 14 through March 2015, and that's pretty self-explanatory for you. Then I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
I'd like to just make a quick comment that kind of sitting in this seat in different meetings every month, this report that Rick, Kathy, Natalie, Kelly team put together is fantastic. I know from what we do, they put a lot of effort into this, and the thoroughness and comprehensiveness that this report generates is exceptional. I would not be surprised if someday there was a Sackers outbreak session at RIP. This is hard, and it requires a lot of effort to produce, but I just think it's I have the advantage of seeing a lot of different systems and how they operate, and this is incredible. And for what it's worth, I wanted to make sure that's noted.
Why are the numbers so different for the two quarters?
What are you looking at?
One's a month.
No, last one's a month.
One's a quarter and one's a year.
Well, one
this
is
a year.
Oh, this is just a month. This is
a quarter and a year. This is a year.
This is just, oh, I see, a year.
And this is a quarter.
Okay.
This is the first quarter of 15. This is the last 12 months through March 15.
Okay. Now it makes sense.
You get a good idea where all our money is coming from and where it's going. Okay. That's everything.
I think that's really helpful information.
Cool, isn't it?
It just gives us a better look at all the moving parts.
Snapshot.
Item 7B, this is the monthly staff report. I can tell you from my perspective and also the due diligence committee's perspective is that we've been spending a lot of time on the investment consultant search, going through voluminous amounts of material, 80 questionnaires, and everybody has put in a tremendous amount of work. I want to thank not just staff, but the committee as well. So that's really been staff's main focus, at least from my perspective, over the last month. And when it comes to the two functional areas within the organization, I'll let Don and Kathy talk about those.
Okay. Well, it's not a due diligence committee. It's an evaluation team. Technical here. No, thank you, trustees, again. You've all put a lot of work into this, and I appreciate it. As far as fiscal services group, we're kind of chugging right along. But there's been a couple of issues with our member data that we've finally been able to resolve, and it's pretty exciting. We figured out a long time ago that we could fix something in the member data, but if it wasn't fixed on the employer side, it was like undo. Every 2 weeks it undid it, and we had to do it again. And the two systems just weren't necessarily talking well to each other.
And a lot of conversation has transpired, and we finally come up with a solution with our biggest employer, which is really exciting. So we'll be able to get in and make that happen. So I can really appreciate that staff did a lot of negotiating and talking back and forth and sorting out the problem so both sides understood it. And we really couldn't go finish our this whole cleanup project we have of our member data until we solved this problem, because it just kept getting undone. And so that was a big deal. It doesn't sound like much, but it really has taken quite a bit of effort to get that done. So we really appreciate staff putting that together. And we do a lot of hand-holding with our districts because they're small. We have one district that doesn't even have computers. So, yeah. We do have a district with, yeah, he checks his AOL account when he goes home once in a while, but pretty much we still have a district without computers.
You have the cemetery.
Yes. Yep. Great people, but they don't even have computers. So for us to be able to get them to start generating their own calculations again is a bigger deal than it sounds. So it's all part of moving and solving little problems that have just been hanging around for a long time, and maybe not problems, but improvements. So getting ready and moving forward with that. We did roll out the draft for the RFP for the IT consultant to Michael and Maria. That's moving forward too.
Would it be, just to go back, would it be cost effective for us to buy them a computer?
I don't know that they really know how to use them, so we'll just...
Well, just the training would be good.
It's going to get turned on.
There's only like three or four.
There's only four employees, okay. And it's really not a problem. They're easy to work with. It's okay. Just kind of a chuckle in this day and age.
It's a cemetery?
It's a cemetery.
It's a
four
district.
Employees. Good people.
What are your succession
plans? Yeah, exactly. But it just kind of gives you an idea that the variances we deal with. The county with 4,000 employees to a cemetery district who doesn't have a computer. That's our variance.
Or a special district.
Yes. So, again, staff is moving forward on that. The IT RFP is moving forward. With luck, we'll have it out by the end of the week. I just got off the phone with Sacramento. And so they're also in the middle of one. So moving forward.
You like
that.
These RFPs, don't
you? No, I am in RFP heaven this year. That's what I've decided to call it, is RFP heaven.
Starts with an H.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I thought that was the appropriate
followed
word.
By the
I thought that was the more appropriate word. It's going to be my year for RFPs. But yeah, staff has been just chugging along and getting a lot of work done.
And she drags us with it.
Oh, I do. It's so much fun.
What... percentage of that 100 new members were safety?
I have no idea.
Look at Jody. Can I ask what percentage of the total hires are safety these days?
It definitely more miscellaneous than safety. We have had quite a few safety positions on recently, but I would say safety are outpaced on miscellaneous. But in any particular quarter, that could be a problem. We do have quite a hiring push in on the safety.
Okay.
We can definitely look if you want an answer to that. We can get you an answer. That's not a problem.
Well, we know Sheriff's going to be hiring him when that building's done.
Right. It's getting there.
And the Member and Employer Services Division has been very busy as well. Joan just brought up the 100 new hires that we've processed in the last month. So getting a lot of new people in, and all of those are being evaluated for reciprocity, that type of thing. We're making sure everyone's coming in with the right age at entry. And we process a lot of estimates and buybacks. And like on estimates, we tell you we did like 45 of them in the last month. That was 45 individual people that we provided them to. Our request form does allow them to request up to 3 dates, and it's very rare for anyone not to request the full 3 dates. So that's really, 45 different people, but probably at least 3 estimates for each of those. And then the buybacks as well, 35 of them in 1 month is very good for the ladies to be able to get those processed and out. They're very, there's a lot of work and detail that goes into those. We have more buybacks coming in right now because of this audit process that we've been telling you about, where we're auditing the files. As we audit the file, if we realize that someone has time that can be purchased, we do send them a courtesy letter letting them know It's very, up until we started this process, it was very common for people to come in at the time of retirement. And then when they came in like a year or two before they're ready to retire and we start talking about it, and they're like, what do you mean? I have time I could have purchased. So we're trying to do better educating our members of the time that is available to them and allowable for purchase. And it shows that it's paying off because our buybacks are definitely increasing. People are getting aware of this more earlier on in their careers, and they're able to save some money on their buybacks. So they seem to really appreciate this effort as well.
Just a quick question on the previous item, the three dates that they have to, the estimates.
For the estimates, yes.
Is it always going to be three dates that we request? Or because I know that one member came to me and they said, I'm retiring on this and this date. But they told me I had to fill out the request for 3 dates.
No, they're not required to request 3 dates. They can require up to 3 dates.
Oh, okay.
We do try to limit it to 3 dates,
right,
because especially in the beginning stages, if we give them 3 dates that are, let's say, 5 years apart, mm-hmm, then if they've got the vital information they need to key into our website calculator. So we encourage them then, if you want to kind of start looking in between there, let's use this calculator. And then as they start getting closer, those dates get closer and closer together. But if we don't limit it, we've frequently seen they want every month over the next year.
Can we do a short tutorial on how to use that calculator?
Yeah.
It's very simple, but people struggle with it for some odd reason.
Okay.
I know. I've sat down with several people myself.
The letters they're putting out for the buybacks, it might sound odd in some sense. If you go on a leave of absence or whatever and had a child, had major surgery or something, people don't necessarily know they've lost retirement time. And they have to purchase it. It's not a freebie. Nobody's handing it to them. But it just is not uncommon for people to not know anything about it. And so as just part of the educating that we try to do is by putting these little notes out, oh, by the way, we just did this audit and it looks like you were on a leave during such and such. If they buy it, the sooner they buy it, the less interest they have to pay.
And I think that's very good, because you're right.
It's education.
A lot of our membership, even some of the ones that have been here for a long time,
totally.
Absolutely.
I'm constantly surprised as to what they don't know.
Exactly.
And I'm talking about 20, 30-year employees that are really challenged as to what the benefits are and what they all need.
And they do get this information. We put it out to them.
Read
we
it.
Tell them, but it doesn't. And a lot of times, even though we share it with a payroll clerks switch out. And the next one doesn't necessarily know it. So when somebody comes back from leave, they don't necessarily know to give them the information. So it's a continual effort to just educate membership on the benefit period. And so by putting out these memos, we found it's really helped keep this 20-year employee going, I can't do that, because they had an opportunity to do it sooner.
Is that information part in the pre-retirement ceremony?
Yes, it's in the, yes.
All right.
We also recognize the need for education, and actually the board recognized that in 2013 at the offsite for strategic planning. And education and getting the members to take more accountability for their benefits and understanding their benefits is going to be a main focus of 2016 for this organization.
Okay. I did have another question. When an employee returns, mm-hmm, former employee, do they get that information then too?
Yes.
Right there.
Like a former employee returning to full-time employment, and maybe they took their money out.
Yes.
We are now letting them know also that they have the right to redeposit that, because that could be really huge. Not only does it add the time, but it could make a difference in what tier they participate in.
Yeah.
So,
I talked to one today who didn't have a clue.
Oh,
they don't do that.
They don't.
Yeah. And in the past, we weren't doing that. We're already gearing up for, we're trying to do what we can with what we have now for education. So we're trying to step up our efforts and do as much of it as we can now. And so this is one of those things. And so it is driving up, even just this little bit that we're doing now is already driving up our staff's what they're, the numbers, the volume that they're putting out of here now in these. We also had a major event earlier this month. We had our annual pre-retirement seminar. It was very well attended. I believe we had like 180 something people there. Pardon me? And when we put this on, we invite our members who we like for them to be within 5 years. It's geared towards those who are within 5 years of retirement. And we do allow them to bring a spouse or a friend or whoever they have that's going to be helping them through this. They come in, we bring in presenters from several different places. We have deferred comp, Social Security, Wells Fargo for the HSA accounts. We have the insurance company that Resco has contracted with. We have Resco come and speak. So lots of different information available to those folks that day. And these people put on a great vendor display over in the opposite room at Harvest Hall. And they are there so that people can come and ask individual questions of them. And that seems to be a very, very good benefit for folks. We get a lot of really positive feedback regarding that. So that was very successful again this year, very well attended, very positive feedback on the entire presentation. And then we also this month, at the May 1st check that went out also included the COLA that was awarded this year, 2.5% for most retirees. Although those that had been retired for many years and had a lot of stored credits, those folks were able to get 3%. So all of that was done, and the checks went out on time with the correct COLAs, and so we're very proud of our staff that they were able to bring all of these things together in the month since we last reported out to you.
When we give out the COLAs, and I think we've probably talked about this before, but do you get calls from retirees saying, why is my check different, higher?
Yes, we do put a message on the check stub itself. Oh, okay. That says if you retired between your original retirement date was between this date and this date, it's a 2.5% increase. If it's between this date and this date, you'll see a 3% increase. But yes, of course, we still get calls. And we get a lot of calls before. They know it goes into effect April 1st, so they expect to see it on their April check. So that generates a lot of calls. And then in May, when it does go up, a lot of people don't open their stub, their notices. They just look at their balance in the bank, and they'll call us and say, my deposit's different. What's going on? And so we get a lot of those types of phone calls, too. So busy phone months. I didn't put that in here. But, yes, you're right. That does generate a lot of phone calls as well.
Well, that's good to know.
But those are good, happy phone calls. Why is my balance higher? Though we like those.
Yeah, but, they know. One thing they all do know, that if it's an error, we will ask for the money back. They just want to make sure it catches quick, and we appreciate it, because if it were an error, we would want to know right away. So we do appreciate that. That's it.
So make sure we're done. Okay, moving on to committee reports and standard committee due diligence.
So the due diligence committee met today, and today's discussion was essentially what we're going to do next week when we're out on our due diligence trip to San Francisco and New York. We took a different approach this year. In November of last year, this board approved a policy that essentially dictated the strategies that we were going to use when we go on this due diligence trip. And when we drew up this policy last year, we took a lot of the recommendations from the CFA Institute. And essentially what the CFA Institute recommends is that we focus more on qualitative issues as opposed to quantitative issues when we go discuss issues with our managers that we're going on site for. And so we spent the time today going over the questionnaires that were submitted to us by each of the five managers that we're going to visit next week, and we narrowed down to each manager specific topics and questions that we are going to ask them, challenge them on next week, and we are essentially going to be the ones that are going to be driving the discussion, and hopefully we can come away with a good sense that we would again hire these managers today that they haven't really had any major structural changes within the organization that should concern us. And just to overall to get a good feeling that we still want to be with this firm. So that's what we discussed today. And as I said, we've got things narrowed down to four or five topics that we're going to discuss with each of our managers, and we will report back to you in a few weeks how those visits went. I do want to say one other thing, that the investment consultant evaluation team that met today, we talked to three potential finalists, and over the next week or two, we will whittle that down to two, and the intent is to have those two come to the full board on July 8th for discussion and a final interview, and on July 8th, we will make our determination. But we spent 3 hours here today interviewing three, and again, like I said, we will figure out, we'll narrow that list down to two here pretty quick, and then we'll move on from there. That's all I have.
Okay, that takes us to FAS.
I'm going to give you a little change of pace, or I'm going to do the quarterly report. Compare and contrast whether you like Nate's approach versus mine.
Don't throw food or anything.
Take away all the food from the bottles. As I mentioned earlier today, there's a gentleman at Sackers, Brian Singer, and he talked about investment strategy and how to, and he made the analogy that investment strategy is like the ocean, where you have tides, waves, and ripples. You know, and the tides being long-term trends, manage the waves. Things are happening over the intermediate term, and ignore the ripples. And as I was saying in the performance report, or about the performance report, it's a similar concept. You can get caught up in what's happening in the short term, but I think you need to focus on what's the big picture, and what's driving the performance of the portfolio over the long term, and are you being successful kind of at the top level? And if I go to your example, it's been very successful at the top level. But I'm going to start back kind of the same concept of page one about, you know, what are the big things happening in the markets that you should actually, you know, are going to have material impacts on the fund. You know, you start out with, well, interest rates. Everybody's talking about interest rates. You know, everybody's saying short-term interest rates are going to go up, and what's going to happen to long-term interest rates, and how's that? You know, that's a significant risk to the portfolio, interest rates. But I could also point out that, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, we were, quote-unquote, at historical low interest rates, and there's only one direction they're going to go, and that's up. And then they proceeded to go down once. They were lower. Interest rates are only going to go in one direction, and they proceeded to go down again. So everybody seems to think, yes, this is going to happen, and I'm sure it will. Interest rates are going to go up. Is it going to happen in the next 3 months, the next 6 months, the next 6 years? Yeah, probably at the end of 6 years, interest rates are going to be higher. Another thing is, you know, obviously the ECB is going through their version of quantitative easing. That's having a big impact on the European markets. You know, there's versions that the European markets are slow. So again, another long-term effect. What is it going to be? You know, so far in the short run, it's been a positive effect on everybody's portfolios with international equities. However, at the same time, the euro for the quarter fell by 11%. So even though the equity markets went up by a lot, it was offset by the currencies going in the other direction.
Can I ask a question on that?
Yeah.
I noticed that our international portfolio on a value-added basis has done very well over the last 6 months. And I'm wondering, after listening to some of the folks here today during the interview, when we measure them against the benchmark, the managers have the ability to hedge out the currency risk. Okay, so they can, and it would have been pretty good to hedge out the currency risk over the last 6 months since the dollar strengthened. What does the benchmark do in terms of currency risk? Is that currency return included in the benchmark? And so consequently, is the managers, the way we view the managers, is it affected by the fact that they hedge and the benchmark doesn't?
The benchmark doesn't hedge.
Okay.
You know, it's completely unhedged. So if there's 30% of the portfolio in European-based, euro-based countries, you're going to have 30% euro exposure in your benchmark.
So it's not the case then that their value added is strictly due to their stock selection, right? Superior performances.
Yeah. They could be underweight or overweight particular currencies that, right, did well or poorly. Same thing, countries, currencies, okay, stock selection. There's a whole bunch of sources. And the attribution, you can actually look at our attribution about the managers, and it does it two different ways. It looks at it, sector and stock, and it also will do a country and currency.
Okay,
so you can look at it both ways. So those are some of the big factors looking at your portfolio currently. I'm not going to go through the next two pages descriptions of which part of the portfolio did well or poorly. I'm a numbers kind of guy, so I go straight to the tables and look at the tables. So if I look at page 6, and this is where I think, the top level report card, total fund. For the quarter, this to me is a bit of a ripple. You look at it and it says, okay, it's nice to interest, but you went up 2.1% for the quarter. Policy index was up 2.4. Those are kind of in the middle of the pack. Longer term, we have fiscal year to date, 3.7, 1 year, 7.5, policy of 7.9. You underperformed the policy by a bit, not a whole lot. But your numbers in terms of your overall policy, you did really, really well relative to kind of all of your peers out there, where you're in the top quartile. And then when I go 2 years, 3 years, and 7 years, it looks even better, both on an absolute basis, where you're in almost the top decile, which is primarily driven by your asset allocation. Your top level decisions drive that number. So that's your policy benchmark. And then a little bit of manager value added, which is the additional for a 5-year number of about 70 basis points. Okay, still, if you compound 70 basis points over a 5-year period, that's a big number of dollars. You've added a lot of dollars to the plan by the active management. So I think looking at that, you can almost stop there and say, okay, that's really nice. But we won't. We'll go down, and next thing I like to look at is asset class composites, kind of bypass the managers and just look at, so I'm on page 7 where I go to the U.S. equity composite. Shorter term, there's been some struggles, but again, that's primarily because of how the portfolio is allocated to small cap, overweight to small cap, which hasn't done as well over this shorter period of time. But longer term, again, your U.S. equity composite is in the top 20th percentile. You've heard it read in the press, it's difficult for active manager to outperform and yada, yada, yada. You've actually been very successful in having a portfolio that has outperformed. And outperforming, broad-based indices and all your peers as well. So, again, really good check mark in that portfolio. International equity, very similar story. It's not as highly ranked, so it's median-like, but it's outperformed slightly over an international equity index. It's been struggling again more recently, but over the long term, it's added a little bit of value. And then to page 8, fixed income. Again, this is where interest rates are, say, 2.5. So you kind of expect on a quarterly basis you might get 75 basis points on a return. First quarter was 1.5%. That's kind of, given where interest rates are, that's a pretty good number. Unfortunately, what you'll see is that number has turn kind of negative because of results that since then. 1 year, again, 2 year, 3 year, all very nice numbers, very stable, median-like, outperforming the policy benchmark. So this asset class too, when I look at this looks, the portfolio is doing quite well. The one little caveat would be PIMCO having some struggles more recently. And so is there a comparison of TINCO's having some struggles. They're currently kind of in a holding pattern with the management issues that they had late last year with Bill Gross and his departure. And then kind of the other parts of the portfolio have done reasonably well. They're all kind of adding value to the portfolio. I think all the diversification efforts that you're making are all, the results so far. Let's say keep your fingers crossed. They're adding value to the portfolio, creating diversification, and being very successful.
Fast question. Do you have any moments of pause due to the overweight in domestic equities right now?
I think that goes back to the conversation we had at the last meeting. I think we'd still say, this is to us, this would be not a time that you'd want to be overweight the asset class. And I'd prefer to have if you're going to reallocate that overweight to somewhere else in the portfolio. We'll still do that. Okay. And then the rest of the portfolio, or the rest of the report, has analyses by manager, and you can look at their characteristics. Do they make, and generally they're all look like what you think they should look like. Performance has been generally good. Characteristics are what you expect. Any questions?
Okay, we'll go on to the monthly flash report, April. I believe you guys have it in your handout, April 30th. So, concluding the month, you can see that the plan returned roughly 1.2%. You have this page, the one with the index returns?
Yes, but we don't have any scribbling on it.
Those are my special scribbles. That's what I'm going to tell you. I can't give that to you. I'd have nothing to say. So let's start on the index page, page one. Looking at the world of indices, two main themes prevail. Large cap outperformed small cap, and you have value outperformed growth. That was the case throughout the market capitalization. You see the Russell 1000 index provided 71 basis points of return. And on the end of that, Russell small cap stocks down 2.5%, pretty notable. On the flip side, you can see in the middle section, you have the ACWI XUS returned to over 5% for the month of April. That kind of goes along with the theme of go where quantitative easing is. And right now, that's happening in Europe, and it's pounding through there. The emerging market indices up 7.72%. That, in large part, is due to the Shanghai Index, which has been smoking hot. Last few weeks, it's been a different story. But up through the month of April was a very strong month for emerging market equities. And down there in the bottom, you see the fixed income indices, Barclays Ag giving up around 36 basis points. And the very bottom there is the JPM EMBI Global. This is the emerging market debt index, up almost 2%, a very strong quarter that was kind of following the emerging market equity indices. Page two, we'll get into the broad portfolio. You get a chance to see that the total fund is hovering around $1.842 billion in assets. Not too far off, another good year or two, and that $2 billion mark will be upon us, hopefully. You can see that the asset class is around 48% in domestic equities. This kind of goes along with Rick's comment. You can see a target allocation down there at 38% target equity. Now, a reminder that that overweight has been a holding pattern as we deploy assets into alternative space such as real estate and infrastructure, which has begun to take shape. You can see that there, down 1.7% now in real estate. That will ramp up as Greenfield comes online. Direct lending, 5.5%. Sorry, let me back up. International equities, about where they should be. Fixed income, about where they should be. Direct lending, 5.5%. And we saw in the quarterly report that John just covered that on a one-year trailing basis as of March 31st, 2015, the composite of direct lenders provided a return of 9.7% to that quirky benchmark of 9%. We finally got over that hurdle. It's been a long haul, but the asset class is doing what we wanted it to from its inception. Page three, this looks at total dollars in the asset classes. I think the big takeaway on this page is the far right column where you see the change, the prior year, right in the middle. The change net of paying out benefits, 6.47%. It's a healthy overall increase when you see the prior year return. Real dollars added to the portfolio. Good tide. That's a tide analogy. Good tide lifting all assets up. Now we get into returns for the month, page four, top line.
The 6.5 is a very good number because our liabilities are growing on average by about 5.5%. So that means we are adding 1% real growth, or we add 1% real growth over the past year.
Yes, and that counts. That stays in the fund, and it is a buffer for future uncertainty. Page four, we see the fund to continue that positive trend. For the month, 1.03% at the total fund level. That beat the policy index around 78 basis points. Now, that does not include the returns that we may have received from things like Greenfield and the direct lenders. That's not going to come through until the quarterly. So the fact that we were able to achieve excess return in light of that fact is a real positive 25 basis points. And the U.S. equity composite, which was a lagger over the quarter, was a real positive contributor of 42 basis points over the first month. Managers that didn't add value, looks like they all did for the most part in the U.S. equity composite. Of note, Legato provided a 39 basis points of value given that the index was down. They protected on the downside, which is a characteristic of that strategy.
Nate, another question, please?
Yes.
So I see we've earned 4.78% this fiscal year to date, ending April 30th, 2015. So if I do some quick math, we'd have to hit 2.8% for May and June to reach our actuarial discount rate of 7.75%. Where are we this year, or this month in May so far? And how likely
it's is been a volatile month all over this.
I think equities are up a bit.
Okay.
I think emerging bonds are down a bit.
I think 2.8% for May and June is.
Oh yeah, you're totally gonna get it.
Really?
You guys are going to get it. You
said it so.
I'm right. I'm a genius. I'm wrong. Who knows what would happen?
He's right. I'm wrong.
I'd say you'll get it. I can feel it. I was in Vegas last week for a conference. $130 at the blackjack.
You stayed at home,
That's right. And I stayed at home. All right.
What rate of return was that 130?
Oh, it was 1,000 IRR percent. It was fantastic. That's a good due diligence question, Mr. DeMartini. All right. Well, moving right along to fixed income, you can see a kind of boring 0.1% return. Lags actually beat the index handily, which was down 36 basis points. And we had outperformance from both our managers, Dodge & Cox and PIMCO, which is nice to see. Something interesting to see, you saw our real estate composite at the bottom there of page five. We have a REIT index, which has been appropriate up to a certain point. They gave back a lot of return, down 5.8%. This has been an asset class. The REIT sector has been smoking hot over the last few years. You can see the trailing one-year return on a previous page one has been in the high teens in terms of total return. So the fact that they've given up a little bit over this last month, not surprising. But the positive is we've diversified now away from just that equity-like beta in the real estate sector, and Greenfield and American Realty have added value in that. And so you can see that 3% number coming through there. And lastly, the direct lenders, that return is meaningless given that it doesn't punch through until we get the quarterly valuations in terms of the asset base. I did have a question, though, back on... How do we value the 12th Street building?
It's just been a flat $2.5 million. It's been that way ever since I got here. I don't know where.
Why do we have? Why is when we look at the quarterly report, it has like a negative return though?
Like I've never seen a negative return on there.
Oh, that's pretty far back.
Is that going back from some impairment costs that we?
No, actually, it's a 1 year. Let me look at that.
What page are you looking at, Nate?
This is going back to. The quarterly report on page 8. I just didn't know if there was something that took place historically that,
I think they just
took the number and what it cost to get into it, probably, or something.
Okay, that's fine.
have no idea.
It's not noteworthy. You can see it's just a blip on the map, but, you know, it's interesting to know.
We didn't have at least that for years. It was just an asset with no return for many years.
Are we calculating that return?
No,
it's at least out now, but it wasn't for 3 or 4 years, at least.
Depreciating the building.
Maybe that's what, okay. Just curious. Probably not the forum to bring it up, but I did.
Curiosity.
Okay, we have two more quick reports, the top 10, and then the manager review. Should we do the manager monitor? This is the one that was printed out that I think you guys have somewhere in your stack that looks at.
David Letterman retired.
So the top 10. Yeah, I'm ready. With.
Are you ready to retire this top 10?
Maybe.
Yeah, I'm ready to retire.
I don't know how necessary it is.
Yeah, we can just, if there's any questions, we can pause. We can take that.
Perfect.
If not, just put in the consent item.
We'll use a yield sign.
Yield.
What's a yield
sign? And that concludes my prepared remarks.
Proceed with caution. That was great, Nate. Thank you. The top 10 was wonderful.
Thank you. One of my best yet.
Okay.
Is that it for that agenda?
I believe so. Is there anything else you guys have?
I believe that's it.
Okay, then that takes us to closed session.
I make a motion, we move to closed session.
A motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Okay. Take care.
See you soon.
You're staying in closed session forever if you guys want.
Yeah.
So moved. We're back in open session.
Have a readout from closed session. Item 10A, a motion was made by Trustee Gordo and seconded by Trustee Riley to accept staff recommendation as follows. To acknowledge and approve the applicant Dennis Perry Jr. is permanently incapacitated for a substantial portion of the essential duties of sergeant with the City of Ceres Police Department, and the applicant Dennis Perry Jr.'s permanent incapacitation is not service connected. And the application of Dennis Perry Jr. for service-connected disability retirement be denied, and a non-service-connected disability retirement be granted effective February 24, 2015, upon member's subsequent application. Motion passed unanimously.
That takes us to members' forum.
Nothing for me.
Nothing for me.
Are we going to get an update on the window situation, the window washing situation?
We can actually give you an update right now. Oh. And I'm going to turn that over to Kathy.
Okay, we had a meeting of 12th Street Management Committee, which meets about once a year, unless there's a disaster. And we go over the budget and the insurance stuff and things like that. And we did talk about the windows. And what is going to happen is, because it's going to cost somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000 to clean the windows on the back of this building, or to do anything on the back of this building because of the where the wires are situated, that Rick and a member of the CEO staff are going to start reaching out to MID, find out what approximately it's going to cost us. If need be, we'll get an engineering study to find out what it will cost to bury the wires, because this building is going to be here for 40 to 50 years, and it doesn't make any sense to put holes in the building for scaffolding for a temporary issue. Even Ninif Tamini from Westland, he even said, we need to just fix this. So it is going to go forward. As you know, it'll take a bit, but we are definitely moving forward in that direction. We do have it in the budget to do the other sides of the building, but the back side, we have to get the wires buried, because we've just, GSA has worked really hard, done everything they can. They've gone out to the street for bids, and they found one company that was willing to build scaffolding literally into the side of the building to get it done, and we still would have to shut down MID and the wires, and it just doesn't make sense. So we're going to move.
Jeff, they're looking at several million to do that?
I think that they'll immediately say $1 million.
It was
They'll immediately say $1 million, because I think that's what the number was when we talked when we were building it?
It was really ugly, and that's what part of the problem was. It was really prohibitive. Yeah, somebody
needs to push them, and I'm not sure they're pushable at this point in time because the staff's a little bit scared of what's going on.
Right.
But it's really hard to justify that number, but they never came up.
Yeah, I don't know where we're going to go, but that's where we're going to start over. We figure that a lot of the people who were there originally have also moved on.
But I just had in my
we have new leadership here.
I know
we're going to approach this and see what we can find out.
I know a man with a Spider-Man branch that I believe finds buildings without
you know,
that's what we need.
They've got some new trustees that more reasonable.
Well,
we've got to
start the process.
I'm going to reach out to them.
Yeah.
We're going to start the process and see what we can do.
I helped a couple of power poles.
Who's that? Somebody on the board. I'm going to go through my brother and see if I can schedule.
I could have done it myself.
Rick, well, we schedule five meetings.
Five meetings with each individual. Talk to all of them.
Yeah.
Just talk to one of them.
Okay.
Because it just, regardless of the cost, which sounds crazy, the building's going to be a long time. If we were to have something happen to the backside of the building, we wouldn't be able to get it fixed either. So we need to address this. Mm-hmm.
What if I just went to one of their board meetings?
I would talk to them before.
Okay.
So that's okay. Where we're at with that. It's moving forward.
Okay. It's a terrible misuse of public monies.
What is?
And then we have an election in June, is it, to replace the safety member?
Yes.
How is that coming along?
The notice of election will be going in the mail tomorrow, I believe. Okay. So, yeah, it'll be at the mailhouse today, so it'll go tomorrow.
That's all.
All righty.
I have nothing.
I was kind of unceremoniously shanghaied into an impromptu meeting of the space next door with my trustee Gordo and CEO Santos regarding creating a public meeting space for this board on square footage that we already own and is mostly improved. So I make a request of staff that you bring that to us as a proposal.
The Shanghai worked.
I had nothing to do with the Shanghai.
Actually, you ran the other way.
Well, they had us down here for breakfast this morning. I figured we might have some stuff off the agenda.
Fix
the
advantages. Supervisor DeMartini will support us on it. All
they there, just laughed.
Either that or we're going to start meeting over at Stancock.
Oh, that'd be so awful. I got to tell you, the stuff that's going off the stamp card is just shocking. I don't have anything today.
What's going on?
We're paying somebody now to teach people how to use a bus. Mm-hmm. I think we appropriated, against my objection, like $650,000 in 3 years to teach people how to ride the transit bus.
Okay.
There's 2/3 of the movement of the wires.
You're not getting that.
I just want to commend Board Member Grover for the excellent job he did at Sackers representing us. I think maybe he's going to volunteer to sit on it every time.
We had a great team. There were four of us strong. Kathy and Mike and Gordon and I, we discussed everything together. And it was actually, there was a little bit of tension at the Sackers board.
Kind of fun.
Yeah, and we lost. So we got our hats handed to us.
Who's in the prison?
Same as the old president.
Oh, okay.
Southern California.
Yeah. L.A. He's an L.A. probation department officer.
Oh, I remember him.
Yeah. And you just need to know that in his acceptance speech, he did break out.
He did.
It's
a major campaign here.
He had everything into it.
Was Bob Palmer there?
No.
He's resigned.
I think a very clear message was
11-9. Yeah, it was Merced was a swing vote, and Merced was Merced's representative was not approved to vote the way we voted. They were approved to either abstain or vote in favor of the current president. Which is really odd.
Yeah, it is.
So they went with yes on retaining.
You were a popular guy.
They were covering their bets.
Well, we all took it together.
No, that's good. Yeah.
It was actually kind of interesting. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, that was it. I think you should hang in there every time.
It's on you, Don.
You came really close to being nominated for president.
No, I think he was nominated.
It was really close. We weren't here that day.
You know, I think the great president is the guy that's acting as treasurer now. He's the he's also the treasurer of the San Diego retirement system. Seems like a really good guy. He interviewed, what was that man's name that was at one point in time the number two guy in the State Department? And he's worked for the World Bank, Bob Wozicki or something like that. And it was an interesting interview, and this fellow ended up running the meeting because appropriately the president realized he was conflicted. He did a really, really nice job. It seems to me if he moves into the position, we'll be better off for it.
Yeah. Was that Brzezinski?
No, it was Dan McKenzie or
something like that.
I did go to the board of directors meeting just because I'm crazy after that, and kind of wanted to see what the tension and I kind of got the idea that from some of what we heard at Sackers, the staff wasn't being treated all that well. So I thought, I'll go sit in on this. And they were talking about just about the conference itself, no policy stuff at all. And they brought up, the evaluation said this was good and that was good. And I just kind of said, you're only getting half the picture. The people filling out the evaluations are the ones at the conference. And they did talk about the fact that the conference attendees for trustees is getting low. And it's at the tipping point. If it goes much lower, they're going to start losing affiliates. And so I just brought it up. I said, you need to start talking to get to the administrators, maybe get on the administrators' roundtable agenda. I said, our board, I can tell you what I'm hearing is that there's too much fluff in this conference. They're going to other conferences. So, and personally, and I told them this, and I said, and I signed, I filled out the evaluation for the conference and said, and I signed my name to it. I said, this conference is one day too long. I said, the lack of people at Friday's session tells you this conference is one day too long. And it did create a very lively, somewhat friendly discussion. So I hope that the administrators roundtable will have Sackers people on the agenda, or possibly maybe somebody will reach out and try to send somebody to a board meeting, all the 20 board meetings, to say, what is it you want from Sackers? Because they think they're missing the gap. So it did create some lively discussion, and I do think the board of directors did figure out that half the systems are pretty unhappy with them. So we'll see some change. I don't know
what the ironic thing is? I think that there used to be more fluff 10, 15 years ago. People sang, which they sang very well, don't get me wrong, but there was, I think, more fluff. I think there's more education now. Could it be better structured? For sure.
Well, I just felt it was worthwhile telling them, hey, go talk to your administrators. They're the ones talking to your board. And there is a pretty active group of administrators right now. And they all are meeting regularly. And it seemed like a good venue for them to maybe find out what else they need.
Are they likely to keep Jim Lights?
I didn't ask any of us. Yeah, that's a good question.
Pardon me?
That's a good question because
that's
I have a feeling he was very much aligned with John Kelly. Even though, we had the
who big, was?
Jim Lights, the guy that we talked to much.
Yes.
And not only that, but he anticipates that if John Kelly wasn't voted in, he would leave the organization.
Oh, there you go. That's your answer.
Oh, okay.
And he says that Salima or whatever her name is, he expects her to leave also.
So they're going to have, that'll be interesting to see where they pull in. It won't be.
Yeah, I don't know.
I haven't seen very much that's even relevant about the whole organization. Period.
Madonna.
Kelly was there, though. She should report on how she
did. Oh, you don't want to get me started.
Throw it out there.
Do you not?
We have to go back in the closed session. Well, I do have something.
Listen, I started going to that 20 years ago, and it's very different now than it was then. It was much more interesting 20 years ago.
There was more fluff.
Huh?
There was more fluff.
Well, there was
Kelly has a
more
great
of everything.
Book.
Well, there was a lighter atmosphere with without these undercurrents. I think
it's too much politics.
There's too much politics. Thank you very much.
It's too much politics.
Kelly, what do you have?
We have the new 37 Act book. I'm not sure if any of you have an actual hard copy or have a need for a hard copy. If you would like the new edition of the hard copy, we used to have binders and they would put updates into them. This is the second year that they've done an individual bound copy, so I have these available if you want them. If not, if you're more into digital, they are on our website, so you can access them there, which would have any changes as they go on throughout the year. But we do have these printed ones that they delivered if any trustees are interested in them.
You can
no
actually,
idea what's in there, so I'll take one.
You can actually click on to the legislation, the law itself from our
yes.
from our homepage. You don't even have to go hunting for it.
Kelly suggested that we form a committee to study that document and have Jeff Grover be there.
I think I second that motion as long as Jim DeMartini is his co-chair.
Also, I handed out your next trustee roundtable. If you guys could get back to me if anyone's planning on going. I don't have anyone attending it as of yet. So if anybody
responded, I would
attending
like to attend.
Okay, perfect. The trustee roundtable. I handed out some pamphlets.
Actually, I was
going
to contact you this week.
I
had
it
on my
to-do list. Okay, I have one attending. And that's all I have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Are we done?
And nothing for me? We're adjourned.